Next on the Golf Digest podcast, we get ready for the U.S. Open by talking to Joe Buck, Fox Sports play-by-play man for golf, as he prepares for the extravaganza ahead at Erin Hills. But first, a word from the USGA. You may know the USGA mostly for its 14 annual championships, which are widely considered the ultimate test in golf. But there's a lot about the USGA you may not know. The USGA works with golf facilities to help them run more efficiently and intelligently, while also reducing their reliance on water. Its handicap system helps level the playing field and makes the game more social. And, along with the RNA in Scotland, the USGA is modernizing the game's rules. They're even asking for your feedback. You're invited to share your opinions with them anytime online. There's a lot to love about golf, and the greatness of the game brings out the best in all of us. Discover more at usga.org. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Ryan Harrington, deputy editor of golfdigest.com. With the U.S. Open just days away, the crew at Fox Sports prepares to broadcast the national championship for the third time since signing its $1.1 billion 12-year TV deal with the USGA. Joe Buck will once again be handling the lead play-by-play role as the championship heads to Erin Hills outside of Milwaukee, the first time the USGA has held the Open in the state of Wisconsin, and the first time this course has hosted a major championship. Of course, Joe is also Fox's voice for NFL football and Major League Baseball. As he gets ready for Erin Hills, he's been kind enough to join us to talk about the upcoming championship and what he sees playing out in the days ahead. Joe, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to, crystallize my thoughts as we're not that far away from the 117th U.S. Open. It's kind of crazy that it's right here, right now. And, for those of us at Fox who only do a handful of events, it seems like it's so far off in the distance, it's never going to get here, and it's finally here. So that's a good thing.
Definitely. Well, I'm sure like a player, as a broadcaster, you don't want to peak too early, but what's your excitement level for the championship ahead?
I can't wait. You know, I found myself last year so excited to get back and do it after year one at Chambers Bay, which was, such an educational process. There was so much learning going on. Obviously, it was a unique venue, and it had a different look. You know, not only were golf fans finding the U.S. Open on a different channel on their television, but it, I think, had a look unlike any other U.S. Open at Chambers Bay. Mm-hmm. And so when you have to wait a year to do it again, you can't wait for it to get there. And I remember after the first day, after Thursday, I was almost depressed because I knew that it was going to end in a couple of days and we were going to have to wait another year. So I can't wait. You know, I got a chance to see the golf course a couple of weeks ago for the first time, was wowed by the size of it. And I can't wait to see what the conditions are like when we get there next week, because when we were there two Mondays ago, it was cold, it was windy, and other than the last three holes, it felt like you were plowing into the wind the whole day. So it's a tough golf course, especially playing it from the back.
Definitely. No, it's interesting that you talked about, the first experience with covering Chambers Bay and whatnot, and to borrow from an overused sports cliche, college football coaches love to say that their teams have the most improvement between week one and week two. I'm wondering if that can be applied to broadcast crews here. And how much did having that first year of Chambers Bay under your belts help you with your coverage last year at Oakmont, and how much does it mean for you as you get ready here for Erin Hills?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when Fox got the rights, Johnny Miller talked about, a place of frustration because NBC was then out covering the U.S. Open. You can't just fall out of a tree and call the U.S. Open. Well, everybody has to the first time. You have to find that tree and fall out of it and figure out how to do it. That was the case for NBC when they got it from ABC, and, it certainly was the case for us. And I think the difficult thing for me, I think, was the same really for us as a network. Having not done it, having not been able to prove ourselves, in this day and age, you know, there's not a whole lot of grace period out there for somebody to find their way.
Sure.
You know, and I think, you know, it takes you doing it once or twice to go, okay, yeah, I know what I need to know. I know how I want to cover this. I know how I've always heard it. You know, from my perspective, I found myself doing like a Jim Nance ripoff or a Dan Hicks ripoff, or, you know, that's what I've heard.
Sure.
And so that's how I've seen golf covered. And now that I've done it a couple of times, then you add in the Senior Open and the Women's Open and the U.S. Amateur, 2 years of that, I think you start to figure out how, you know, you bring our style to it. You're no longer doing an imitation of what you've seen and heard over the years. You get to actually be more yourself. And so that's what I'm looking forward to. How that manifests itself in the course of a week on the air, I don't know. I can't tell you that. But I know that the comfort level, being what it is now, makes it a lot more exciting instead of intimidating going into what is a really long event for us on the air. So the excitement level's beyond high, and I agree with those college coaches. You know, you do improve between week one and week two, or in our case, year one and year two.
Sure. Well, it was interesting. In your memoir that came out last year, Lucky Bastard, you mentioned the challenge of golf coverage being that you really didn't get to see many live shots. That you described how it was good training as being an air traffic controller as much as anything. Has that gotten easier? Have you become more comfortable with that? And I'm curious if just like you said, getting getting some more innings pitched here has helped you get through that standpoint.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, if you think about it, and I'm not the smartest guy in the world, so I wasn't aware of it. When I go to do a World Series or I go to do a Super Bowl, I've got literally the best seat in the house.
Sure.
And I am looking at all the action. I can see into the corners in baseball. I can see the far sideline in football. And whatever's going to happen on that playing field, I'm going to actually see it unless, you know, I get knocked out in the booth. So I'm going to see it with my eyes, and I'm going to be able to, you know, digest what happened and come up with words that fit the situation. In golf, not only, you know, in the case of Aaron Hills, it's 650 plus acres, and I am sitting in one stationary spot. If I turn around, I can see a sliver of the 18th hole,
mm-hmm.
but for the majority of the event, really all of it, when I'm on camera, I'm facing away from the golf course.
Yeah.
So I'm doing it all on monitors. And, you know, like NBC has gone to over the last couple of Olympics with some events, they keep people back in the States. They're not even there.
Sure.
They're not, you know, whatever the event may be, they're calling it from a studio in Secaucus. And you could do that in golf easily. At least for the actual event, you know, that takes away, you know, what it's like being there with the conditions and getting a chance to interact with the golfers and getting to talk to them and seeing what they like and don't. But, you know, for the event, I am hostage to whatever they are showing on these monitors. And I'm also hostage to the information that I'm getting in my ears. So I think my relationship with Mark Loomis, our producer, mm-hmm. has grown as well. It takes a while for him to know what information I need and for me to know what I'm going to get when we're going to a certain hole. So when Jason Day pops up on four putting for birdie, you know, you hope it's going to be Jason Day because you're leading to it. You hope it's the fourth hole, and you hope he's actually putting for birdie. I'm not there. I have to get that information from elsewhere. So I got a real appreciation for how good the guys are that call it more regularly. And it was a steep learning curve as to how to figure out, you know, what buttons to push and what I need to do to be good at it.
How exactly do you prepare for the Open? I've got to think it's a little bit different than perhaps preparing for a Super Bowl or a World Series game. But, I mean, are you meeting with players in advance to talk with them? Are you watching Golf Channel 24/7? I mean, what is the process of getting your game face on?
thankfully, I'm a fan, so I watch a ton of golf. I am a golf channel watcher and aficionado, and it's kind of my default channel at home during the course of a week. And then we've got a great information system. You know, we can't act like we haven't watched any golf since the last time we were there. I mean, it's a year's worth of golf on the PGA Tour. So we've got a service and a woman, Anna Laird, who puts together every Monday a recap of all the tours, what's gone on, the articles written about the events. So it's not just PGA Tour. It's Champions. It's LPGA. It's stuff going on in the amateur world. And I'll read that every Monday, highlight it, pile it up, and I've got a stack of information that is intimidating to look at right now, but I'm now in the process of transcribing a lot of that information into a more easily findable folder. Sure. So if I want to know who won whatever event at the end of January or the end of February or the beginning of March, I have all that. And what were the key shots? So if somebody kind of comes out of nowhere, I mean, we all know the Dustin Johnson story, and you know the year for Jason Day, and we're all a lot more familiar with John Rahm and guys like that. But, you know, if you get kind of the dark horse coming in, you can look at where he's been during the course of the year, and it's all in front of me. So, yeah, baseball, football, I've watched a lot of that action. I've been at a lot of that action. And I can recall in the Super Bowl calling, you know, whatever, a Giants game back in week four. And you can see their actual progress. But now I'm kind of just like any other fan. I've been watching from a distance. I've compiled this ridiculous mountain of information. And now I try to go through it, whittle it down so that, you know, I it's not overwhelming when you need to know it right now and, you know, somebody pops up on the screen. That's kind of the process that I've put together. And just not to run on, but I have these boards that I've put together that are 11 by 17 cardboard stock, and it's got everybody alphabetically, and it's got name, age, years on tour, how many U.S. Opens, best finish in a U.S. Open, how many tour wins. And it's just a like an Excel spreadsheet straight across so that I have all the basics when somebody comes up on screen. So there's a lot of work involved, and I can't wait to kind of show my work like we did back in grade school.
Do you get a chance at the start of the week to interact with some of the players and get to speak with them at all to supplement, obviously, some of that stuff? Or is that logistically, you know, I'm just curious, you know, you hear obviously about broadcasters who get to meet with some of the players during the week ahead of a football game or a baseball game or something along those lines. Is that a potential at a U.S. Open, or are they so busy with practice that just doesn't work out? Or I'm just curious what that might entail, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, if I go back to, first of all, it drives me nuts. Every football broadcast, everybody says, well, when we talked to Tony Romo, well, when we talked to, it just becomes kind of a crutch that broadcasters lean on. But it is good information, and it's different than the Monday morning roundup that I get during the course of the year. I want to interact. That's way more valuable. To walk with Adam Scott and to say, you know, how does this golf course fit your eye? What do you like about this golf course? What do you not like about this golf course? What holes, you know, are you excited about? Where can you make a move? Where do you have to be a little bit more defensive? That to me is way more informational and way more important for me to try to get than just the statistics, you know, who's first in greens in regulation, who's first in strokes gained putting. I you know, anybody can get that. But not anybody can get inside the ropes and talk to McIlroy or talk to Zach Johnson or talk to, I don't know, whoever it may be. And I've found them to be really welcoming. And maybe it's because they've seen me do other sports and they're talking to a different person than they typically see. But guys have been really open, and I've walked a lot of practice rounds with Jordan Spieth with Ricky Fowler, with Adam Scott. I've been inside the ropes, and I've watched him throw a ball down, hit it, be around greens, chip it, see how the ball reacts on the green. That to me is vitally important to what we're doing, and I think I'm getting better at that. But it's also good for Paul Azinger and Brad Faxon and I to walk with these guys, yeah, and, you know, respect their process and not bother them, but you try to get information that you wouldn't typically get from the newspaper article that you're reading in, you know, whatever it may be, USA Today or the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel come next week.
I was going to mention Paul and Brad. You've got a couple of very golf-savvy analysts, obviously, that you share the booth with in those two. And I think what viewers like about both of them is that neither of them is really necessarily shy to offer their opinions. Is there something that you know that can, and I don't mean to be over the top with this, but that can set them off, or you know that if you say something or you do something with one of them, you can get them going? And how easy or difficult is it to kind of pull that trigger with those guys?
It's really easy. They're both very opinionated. They're both very smart. They're both really funny. I mean, I think if there was one word that I would use to describe Paul Azinger, it would be funny. And if you were privy to our text chains that have gone on for the past 300 plus days since the last time we were doing a U.S. Open, it would be really entertaining and probably would get at least two or three of us fired, because there's something going on, and there's opinions, you know, whether it's the Tiger situation or what's going on with Phil Mickelson, who's bowed out for his daughter graduating high school or whatever it may be. I mean, everybody's got an opinion.
Sure.
And we're no different than anybody else. And so when we get there, spending time together is the key to that. So we were all there for media day. I played the golf course from the ridiculous back tees for my game with Brad Faxon, and he and I were trying to hang on and trying to find fairways with the kind of carries it takes from back there to even find the short grass. But walking the golf course with those guys and seeing how it fits the eye of Paul Azinger, seeing what Brad Faxon thinks of the greens. I mean, there are so many different ways to go, and I'll get a better feel for what will get them going as the week begins. And yeah, it's a good question, because that's really my role.
Sure.
I need to find those buttons on them to hit so that they can be at their best. That's my job. I don't know that I did that well with Greg Norman year one. And you know, I was fighting for my life trying to figure out how to do it. He was new to TV, obviously, knows more golf than, you know, he's forgotten more golf than I'll ever know. But having that interaction on the golf course and saying, you know, what do you like about this course, Paul? You know, when we were out on this fifth hole, you know, the rough down the right side, whatever it might be, it's a really tough shot here. And you and I were out there, you know, what is Adam Scott facing right now? Just different things that I need to bring up and be better at to make us more interesting as a group. That I think is the number one mission for me in 2017.
You mentioned Phil, and obviously it seemed a bit of a shock when we saw the news last week that he was going to likely skip the Open, that the conflict with obviously his daughter's graduation, her high school graduation. Was it a shock when you saw that first, and you know, how did you digest that info?
Yeah, I mean, I think we as a network, and I'm sure the USGA and golf fans are disappointed when you have a major, especially the one that Phil hasn't won, and he's not going to be there. You know, that's disappointing, but I think the father in all of us, and I have a daughter who will graduate next year.
During the U.S. Open week, or
a
no?
daughter who has graduated and who is in college. It made me smile. I mean,
sure.
I think we all remember 1999 and Pinehurst and that moment with Payne Stewart. And, You know, it makes me feel a heck of a lot older to know that the child that was being born is about to graduate high school, and his priority is to be with her and to show his face. You know, I made a point to a New York Times writer, Richard Sandomir, years ago when, in 2006, I was hosting Fox NFL Sunday and doing the game and doing the baseball, the game of the week and all the postseason. And Fox let me take some of the weekends off during the baseball season. And he said to me, well, how can you call yourself the voice of baseball on Fox if you're not there every week? And I said, well, I don't. That's not up to me to call myself that. And secondly, I'm way more fearful of overexposure on TV and underexposure at home. My priority has always been, when possible, kids first. And I know that because I was a child. My dad was running around doing a million events, and he missed a lot of that stuff in my life. And while he and I were best friends, I would have loved to have had him there. And so for his daughter, I'm sure that means the world to her, and it lets her know where she sits with him in some ways, that, you know, no matter how important the U.S. Open is, she comes first. And I think that speaks really well of Phil. And for any of us who are dads, I think you kind of give it a wink and know that that he's doing the right thing. At least he is, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
So you don't have the potential of Sergio Garcia breaking through and finally winning his first major at the U.S. Open now, but what would be the ideal storyline, or what storyline would you like to see play out next week? Is there something in particular that you're looking at or looking for from the championship?
Well, Tiger's not in it, right?
Unfortunately, no.
I think Fowler's the guy that kind of, as far as on that list of players that I would like to see win a major championship, I think Ricky Fowler is, you know, somebody that has cut through a lot of the groups, a lot of the noise. I think he stands out. I think he's a really good guy. I've gotten to know him over the years around golf and away from golf. I think he's genuinely a good person, and I'd like to see him succeed. Dustin Johnson being able to repeat, and the last guy to do it is on our crew, Curtis Strange. Mm-hmm. I mean, that to me, to see if a guy can do this back-to-back years, it's been since the late 80s since that's happened. It just reminds you how hard this championship is to win. And for as good as Dustin Johnson is and seems to be head and shoulders above the rest right now, it's odds tell you that he's not going to win back-to-back championships. So to see somebody try to accomplish that would be really cool. And then I mentioned John Rahm. I mean, we had him in the U.S. Amateur a couple of years ago, and you could tell he was a special player, but my God, it seems like he's been on the tour for 9 minutes, and he's a top 15 player. And every week he seems to, you know, stare down the competition, not be in awe of where he is. He's a young guy that I think fans will enjoy watching grow on the tour. So he's another guy that I think we as a group kind of latch on to because we had him in the amateur. So I would say off the top of my head, those are the names, but you know, who knows? And that's the beauty of this. You got 156 guys going in, and it's our national championship, and we'll see who the best one is at the end of the week in Wisconsin.
Two quick sort of non-U.S. opening but golf-related things, and then I'll let you go. I'm curious. Tony Romo, a guy you've covered heading into the broadcast booth for CBS, besides NFL games, he's going to participate in some of the network's golf coverage. Any words of wisdom for Tony Romo as he gets into your business?
I'd say have some fun. Be yourself. I mean, he knows the game. He's obviously a good player, as we all know. But, yeah, he couldn't be in a better situation. He's sitting there with Jim Nance and Nick Faldo. Nance is the best in my generation to do it. And Faldo has gotten better and better and better and more open and warm and good at it. So I'd say soak it all in because he's going to go from this to the big stage of calling NFL games and doing them at some point in the season. I don't know if they come out of the gate. I think they do, doing two games a week.
Sure.
So it's a lot. And he's going to find out that, you know, you need to be ready with an opinion. You don't have time to go back, think about it, formulate the perfect quote, you know, walk some line between being fair and being critical. You have to do it right now. And so use it as research for the football job. But nobody's expecting him to come in and be Ken Venturi or, you know, Faldo or Azinger or Miller or any of these guys. It's not what he does. So use it as a springboard for the NFL season and have fun with it and soak in what it's like to wear a headset and look at a camera when the light goes on and talk to a producer, hear a producer talking to you while you're talking. There's a lot of small things that those of us who have done it for a while, I think, take for granted that he's going to have to get used to in a really short amount of time.
Definitely. The one other thing, and you mentioned Tiger facetiously a little while ago, but I was curious, you know, when, you know, do you have any regrets for not being able to have called a golf tournament where Tiger Woods is in the field, let alone really in contention?
Yeah, I do. But I was at least smart enough to pay attention just as the average fan. But my God, to be in a tower with a headset on while he's either leading or chasing down the leader would be a career highlight. What a thrill, you know, what a thrill that would have been. I don't think we're going to see it again in the championship, like a U.S. Open, with him either in the lead or stalking the lead, chasing down a leader. He's on the Mount Rushmore. You know, he's on the Mount Rushmore of the greatest to ever participate in a sport, you know, whether it's Jordan in basketball or it's Gretzky in hockey. To me, it's Tiger Woods in golf, Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus, you know, and so it's a shame on one hand, because, you know, we at Fox, that would be a thrill. And me individually, personally, selfishly, that'd be awesome to be a part of and see what that feels like. But on the other hand, I got to watch it as a fan, and mm-hmm. I paid attention. And I think we all knew that we were watching greatness. And so I'd be shocked if the greatness isn't over. But I guess with my Fox hat on, I'm hoping it's not.
Sure.
And I just think on a personal level, I just want to see him get his life squared away and be healthy. And, you know, I think any of us who have dealt with a bad back know what that feels like. It's miserable. I've been through two operations. I have a herniated disc in my back right now, and my leg's numb from the knee down on the left side. And that's – it's no fun. And then when you're him and you're supposed to react and be great and respond athletically and – always be better than the rest, and now you're just an average player because you're not physically fit. I can't imagine what that's like in his mind. Sure. So to get healthy, I think, is priority number one. And then we'll see, as he's in his early 40s, if he can put it all back together. But my God, that would be a great gift to the sport. And to us as a network, if he could be Tiger again in the U.S. Open.
Well, Joe, I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to us about the Open. I know it sounds like you're excited. We are excited, too, obviously, for it to all kick off. Best of luck to you and the Fox crew next week, and enjoy the tournament.
All right, Ryan. Thanks a lot. Anytime.
Thanks again to Joe Buck for joining us on the podcast this week. We're looking forward, obviously, to the Fox's telecast of the championship as we get ready for the play at Erin Hills. And thank you all for listening to another edition of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and please leave a rating and review as it helps us get the podcast out to more listeners. Until next week from the championship, thanks for joining us.